Go ahead and get started, Matt.
All right. Okay. Matt, do you have a start to the ResourceX presentation?
Yes. So to tell you a little bit about this, ResourceX is going to be the format in which people submit their ideas. It's a little less formal than a traditional RFP, and we thought that would be good just so people could get their ideas to them. It'll be a little more inclusive than a normal RFP because there won't be as many issues and things that they have to work through in order to have their RFP be correct and be accepted by the city.
Adam, do you need to do anything on the laptop?
You just need to press unmute on the red button there on the remote when you're ready to start.
They're muted. Okay.
Correct.
And so this will be a screening process before the full RFP is completed by the organizations. We are also hoping to offer some capacity building opportunities for some of the organizations that may not have a fully baked idea or presentation for the city. What we plan to do with ResourceX is have it open for the first tranche of the funding for this first month or two, take the whatever we receive proposals from the community, and then look at those proposals and then put it back out for that second tranche once we receive what the criteria for that second tranche will be.
When would this go live?
We're hoping as soon as Monday, next Monday.
What?
Okay.
As long as we get council's blessing.
Okay.
So I'll let Eric start off the presentation. Eric, are you there? Eric, you there?
Eric, you there?
Oh.
Yes, I can.
Okay.
Sir.
Hello?
Okay.
There you go.
Can you hear us?
Eric?
I got it. I'll meet him again.
All right, there we go.
Can you hear us?
Eric?
Eric? Yes, I got you.
Can we turn off that speaker? Adam, can we turn off the speaker of the laptop?
Yes.
Hello, sir.
They're all muted.
Okay, that's weird.
Ah, but we can hear him.
I feel like I was having a hearing, Jeff.
We did too.
We can hear you.
I don't think he can hear us, though.
He cannot hear you. Sorry. I apologize for my technical difficulties. So. I'm not sure where the feedback's coming from because everything is muted.
Could it be from the other audio recording we're doing the meeting itself?
It could be from that.
Mayor, would it be okay to?
Can we record this? Because then that could replace.
Record the Zoom.
I do not have it set up for that now.
It's live.
Okay.
Well, can we listen to him and not ask questions?
For this portion?
I can tell him.
Yeah.
Can we just ask him for the presentation?
Yeah. Yeah. We can turn it off for this part as long as we have it on for the second part.
Which part would you like me to turn off?
We can turn off this audio.
We're going to first try turning off the speakers in the lobby. That would also be.
He still has his.
I can tell him to go ahead.
Can you chat him and tell him to start his presentation, and we will just chat our response in the chat box? You can maybe turn back on our video so you can see that we are.
All right. Good evening, City of Columbia. Pleasure to be here with you this evening. Hopefully, the audio is now fixed. I'm going to go ahead. My screen share is disabled, so I want to make sure you can see my presentation.
This
is permission to do that, I believe.
Zoom is so easy.
But just to get it over, while that's being worked out, interview myself. I am the head of consulting for Resource Exploration, otherwise known as Resource Tech. And perfect. Thank you for getting that cleared up. And we have been contracted to Quad City to develop and share a ARPA tool with you for the State and Local Fiscal Recovery Fund. And I want to take time to give you a brief demonstration of the tool itself. If we have time, I can obviously get into the tool and show you as well. So many of you are probably wondering where Resource Exploration is. We are a gov technology company, GovTech Vertical, and primarily we're comprised of four municipal government professionals. My background, I was a city manager for over 20 years in four different states, and had the pleasure of serving multiple communities. We are the creators of something called priority-based budgeting as well. Many of you may have heard the notion of priority-based budgeting, or PBB. We are the progenitors and providers of that software, methodology, and tools. But we also provide consulting and tools to help advance just fiscal analytics in general. And our goal really is just to make local government more responsive, more agile, more efficient, as well as to begin to utilize data to make decisions. So what does our engagement look like with the City of Columbia? As I stated from the outset, we were hired to essentially help you create a tool that would become a clearinghouse for proposals from either internal or external, from not-for-profits. And specifically, the way that our tool is set up in our contract is that we can accept proposals from basically anybody. With some caveats, obviously. But, we're set up right now to help you with this first tranche of your $12.5 million to be focused upon community violence, homelessness, mental health, and workforce development, the way that our tools set up. And the focus of our second tranche will also be to help address specifics that come from your ARPA community engagement survey results. So we're prepared to have an agile software platform that allows to, obtain proposals from many different categories. So let me give you some of the highlights of the tool itself. Again, we worked with your team to create a very customized interface. First and foremost, I don't always say this to all my clients, but I really have enjoyed working with your team. Very sharp, very attentive and engaged group who clearly has the community's best interest at heart. We have built into the proposal a way to receive information and description. So in a minute, I will show you the proposal interface, which will allow for, again, interested parties. They can even start essentially tomorrow to upload proposals into this tool. But we want to capture proposal information and then obviously a description of what the issue they're hoping to resolve through their proposal. Again, we want to have information provided from the entity that's making the proposal. This obviously is very important so that you understand or your team can understand as they score and evaluate the efficacy of the proposal. Again, whether or not the entity itself has the wherewithal to deliver the results. But also, if in fact they actually have a track record that would, lead you as the City of Columbia to say this is something that we want to make this investment within. We also have several questions built into the proposal that, again, were created in concert with your team that, again, just gives the capacity of this organization to complete the proposal. One of the things that I'm really excited to see the City of Columbia do is provide entities who may not have the general wherewithal to put a proposal together to get community building help. And I think that'll help you in the end to get some better proposals as well. But we do have questions relating to the capacity ability of organizations to develop a proposal. And then obviously one of the things that's very, very important is that we wanted to ensure that the applicant or proposer would be addressing which area of the council's concern would be addressing the proposal in the proposal. And we'll talk about those areas again here in a second, but again, it gets back to ending community violence, dealing with mental health, homelessness, and workforce development in this first particular tranche. Then obviously another thing that's really important for you as a city is to articulate or have the proposal articulate which area of treasury guidance the proposal is going to address. And again, this will be used for reporting purposes for your organization moving forward with the federal government. Then obviously we want them to also include budgetary information. As you are aware, this ARPA funding is not just a one-year thing. It obviously have up until the year 2026 to implement the funding, but there's multiple years in which organizations who are making a proposal might have to provide budgetary information. And then obviously, we've also baked into this tool set the ability to upload documentation. Documentation, again, not only just about the not-for-profit, their status, but any other documentation that will help in the scoring process itself. And as we'll talk in a few minutes about the specifics of the scoring rubric or scoring methods that will be used to evaluate these proposals, we're allowing organizations and entities to upload documents that talk about the efficacy of their previous work to indicate to your team and your staff who's going to be doing the scoring whether or not they're using a tested and proven methodology to roll out whatever they're doing. And then obviously, again, the last thing that you'll be able to do with this software is score the proposals and then print a final report. All right, so the actual tool itself, once you get in, the organization will get in, they'll be able to see a screen that looks similar to this, where they're able to actually put in a proposal. Now, I'll say this, I have taken a screenshot where I have the ability to see all proposals. And you can see we have several test proposals in right now. But organizations and, you know, entities, these not-for-profits, are only going to be able to see their own proposals. But here is a screenshot that shows, again, what your staff will be able to see, and that is all proposals that have been submitted. Within the tools as well, during this input proposal phase, what you're going to be able to see is this. It's really simple to be able to add a proposal. They'll just click the Add Proposal button. And then a screen that looks like this will pop up, and it allows them to put in some, again, critical information that will help to articulate the nature of their proposal. They can name it. Again, you can see here organizations applying for funding for more than one program need to complete multiple proposals, but they can put their title of their program here, a description of their proposal, very brief. And then if you can see here, we are hoping you to capture critical information about that entity that's making the proposal, including, you know, again, their website, who their head is, organization, whom to contact, and so forth. Additional information that we collected in the tool, tool is this. We have multiple questions that, again, as we articulated just a few minutes ago, do they need help with capabilities of putting the proposal together, yes or no? And then, again, here are the things that we are very concerned with. Again, addressing the council's concerns of hitting these four topical areas, community violence, mental health, homelessness, and workforce development. And then, again, this is treasury guidance information here that we want to capture. But having them articulate, hey, are we helping with public health? Are we dealing with negative economic impacts? Are we serving, from an equitable standpoint, the disproportionately impacted communities? Are we dealing with premium pay, infrastructure, revenue replacement, or is this administrative? And again, just some other information that's really helpful for your organization, again, to score the proposal, but again, looking at those hub zones, those historically underserved businesses or historically underserved populations. So that's information we're collecting there, too, in the proposal. And again, very important information that your team wanted to have, and we've put this into the proposal this. Just again, having the entity describe the program itself. What are the intended goals? What are you trying to achieve? And then how you achieve those goals briefly, why you believe this program is needed, and then who's going to be impacted. We definitely want to know who the end user of this particular program who might be impacted will be. And then again, just simple statements again of ensuring that there's equitable allocation of this program to those residents in your jurisdiction. And then lastly down here, that people can save their changes. So another area we want to talk about is this area here. And this is important as well from the standpoint of changing tabs from proposal info to budget and attachments. As you can see here, we are allowing organizations to articulate the amount of funding that they require to accomplish their work in multiple fiscal years, 2023, 24, 25, or 26. And again, if this is going to incur expenses beyond 2026, we're asking them to say, what is it, how much would it be needed? Again, because I'm just like you and many of the other clients that we work with, we're looking for sustainability of programs. So this particular question is put in there for that particular purpose. And then we also allow for the applicant or proposer to upload a budget template. The budget template is already baked into the tools. It basically asks for money, you know, basically a really simple spreadsheet in an Excel format that they can download and then re-upload back into the tool that articulates how much money they need for office expenses and overhead, but whether it's supplies or program expenses. So that's important there. And then lastly, some documentation that you as a city may want, they can upload. The nice thing about our uploader is they can upload PDFs, Excel docs, Word docs, Google Sheets, whatever they want into the tool. Now, once your team has received applications or proposals throughout this month of October, this first tranche of funding, well, then the next step will be internally for your team to score them. And the way scoring works is another module within our tool set that your team has already had the ability to play around with a little bit, to kind of kick and to test, kick the tires and test a little bit. But you can see we've already done some old proposals that have already received some funding. Your Department of Health team has already tested them out with the tool set itself. Now, the areas that your team will be scoring potential proposals with are as follows. We are certainly looking to see that they follow our priorities that you as the city council have set. Certainly, they're going to be looking at the demonstration of need. They're going to be looking at the efficiency and or efficacy of their approach to dealing with a particular problem, challenge, or opportunity in your community. Definitely will be examining and scoring equity impact. They're going to be looking at outcome of measurement. In other words, how will you be baking in metrics that will help to ensure the accountability not only of the expenditure of the funds, but of the efficacy of the output as well. And then also they'll be looking for sustainability. Your team will be scoring on sustainability. So these are the five areas of scoring. Our priority is demonstration of need, efficiency, equity, outcome, and sustainability. Scoring is really quite simple in our tools. It's basically a zero, a two, or a four. As you can see here, looking at this particular one, we looked at workforce development. This was a test of scoring that was done by your team. Four typically means it's the highest demonstration of need here, significant need, demonstrated high urgency. Two is, some alignment with ARPA priorities, this particular program. Efficiency was two, but we have a zero, a two, or a four. A zero means no alignment, two means yes, some alignment, and four is significant. And so that's the scoring that will be done. At the end of the day, once all scoring is done, your team will be able to look at a page within the tool set itself that will provide an analysis, if you will, of every one of the proposals that has been submitted and scored. And ultimately, there is a score that is calculated by the tools, predicated on the scoring that's been done by the team, and you'll be able to see in rank order the top proposal down to the proposal that did not have the highest score, as well as the opportunity and the ability to run a report, a PDF report of all the scoring. As you can see here, the PDF report, once the scoring is finished. I wasn't able to print out a report for you yet because you haven't gone through the scoring, but the scoring in and of itself, scoring report, will provide you with not only an analysis of just the proposals and how they scored, but again, a recapitulation of the highlights of each of those proposals. That in a quick nutshell, because I know that you as a city council are very, very busy, is the presentation on the tools. I'd be happy to take a few questions from you if you had some this evening, but we from ResourceX are excited and very honored to be able to work with your community and are ready to help you to put this out to your public as soon as possible.
Can you hear us?
Yes.
Sorry, we're very excited about that. All right, are there any questions from council of staff or ResourceX? I guess the question I have is, we're talking about doing this and then kind of revamping the process based on our engagement survey results that we'll receive for our second tranche, is that correct?
Correct, that's correct.
Okay, and then what's the process for this, the information, these letters of intent? Do they come back to council or they come to us after you've decided? How does that come to us?
So after we've reviewed it and we actually moved to them actually providing us a full proposal, the full proposal will come to the council for funding.
Yeah, Pat.
So my questions are more towards city staff and not towards the ResourceX folks. Our software has a great interface. It looks really easy to understand. But when we're looking at how we assess what our high needs are, and we have some documents that we know exist that have done some data collection, including the results of the Housing and Community Development Survey that we did last year. We have the full report from Boone County's Upward Mobility Action Plan, and we also have the health assessment, the most recent one. I forget the years that Stephanie's group provided that. Sorry, my glasses are fogging up. But I'm unclear as to how we're using this data to make determinations about what we fund or don't fund. Is that a required reading and analysis? Are you settling on those particular priorities before staff undertakes to read and score the submittals?
Hey, Mish.
Yeah, so we are doing a community engagement process to get feedback from the community about how to allocate the second tranche of funding, and that feedback will come to you all, and then you all will make that determination of how best to allocate funds. So you'll have, so if you want to use those resources, those are available, but then you'll have the community engagement results too to see what, you know, through our surveys and focus groups, what are the community thought was a priority.
Did that answer your question?
No, not really, but I appreciate it. So I understand there's the process by which you've brought together, I know you have stakeholder groups and you have small group discussions and you're collecting their informed decision-making based on their lived experiences. I get that. But there is some data available, although we struggle with using data, that says over time we have determined that this is a criteria and this is a, I'm sorry, I didn't have a chance to reread this stuff. I realized late in the day, like, oh my gosh, I need to pull these reports and bring them with me. But I didn't have a chance to reread them. So if I'm looking at trying to address our deepest need in, let's check the first four areas because you're not doing focus groups on that. If we're looking to attend to our deepest need in those first four areas, what part of the process involves doing a review of the data that has been collected about our residents and parsing that down to, we know from the data, not only from, and there's other documents, but Stephanie, what was the years that you did your community health assessments? Is that the most recent one? Okay. So let's say you look at the data from the 2018, because it was data rich, and we look at the data from Boone County's, they got a grant and they did a pretty data-rich study of where are our deepest needs. And we have the Housing and Community Development Survey, which is getting better but still has some problems, but we have some report on that. So how is it that we are first determining those things and using that as part of the process to score the submittals?
I think we would have to see the submissions first because we do not know what we'll receive from the public. And I think once we see those, then we can sort of look to these documents and tie those in.
And see, that's where my concern is also, because as a, I don't know if I want to call it philosophical or cultural or whatever, but what I've observed in Columbia is when we have money available, we say with all genuineness to the community, if we were to give you this much money, tell us what you would spend it on. And but what we haven't been able to do is to align our data to say our deepest need is this. Which of you can come forward and show us how you would spend the money that we have available to address this deepest need? It's kind of like which part, who starts the circle? Because they're all interconnected. Okay. And that's my concern.
So one thing, can I ask then a clarification on this? On what slide number am I at? 12 of 13. And also, Eric, I'm sorry. These are probably more questions for staff. I don't know if anyone has any questions for ResourceX. Think of them right now. You have the scoring example. Slide 12 of 13 has the scoring example. And I wonder, if, to Pat's point, when this says high need, like scoring meeting, that this is a high need and impact benefiting vulnerable populations or different areas, my assumption is that your committee that is doing this scoring are using, because you all are in that Boone Impact Group.
Yes.
You're in all the groups that Pat has mentioned. So my assumption is you're using those to identify what is a high need to then allocate if they are meeting actually a high need from that. Am I correct?
Yes, and there is a section on the application on the system too that asks about the need too. So they're able to provide any data.
And then you guys are able to put it with your data.
And frequently citing, you know, the site reports that we have.
Okay. Yeah, Nick.
And I know that often on a RFP, particularly the PHHS, there is a requirement to show the need. So, and then you can refer to the Boone County indicators. You can refer to things like the health survey and so forth. Is there an element of that in this? Will there be an element of that in this?
So, on this one, we just had the ARPA priorities, and we were thinking about holding off those more detailed questions until the full proposal and asking them to cite things that you just mentioned.
Mm-hmm.
But it could be included in this.
The full proposal? So will there be a two-step process?
Yes, so this is the first step.
Okay.
And the second step, they'll be able to go into more depth about the needs of their that they're addressing.
And are you all setting priorities? Like
for the second half,
mm-hmm. just like you did for the first?
That was the assumption based on what we get from you all as for the results of the focus group and surveys.
So you all will be setting the priorities just like you did for the first one based around what you've read.
I think it's just making sure that we're aligning the needs, which my assumption is based on the survey results, what council decided are the first priorities are the same things that I read in the Boone Indicators group. They're the same things I read in our community health assessment. So a lot of these are same, the violence interruption, homelessness, affordable, I mean, all of those are things that are in there that I'm seeing. So, and Pat, and we have 5 minutes more on this one before we're going to our next.
One more question.
Yeah.
So I appreciate that you, and again, I like your interface. If he's still there, the gentleman's still there. I like how that it looks easy and understandable to use. What are we doing about inquiring and requiring that we are also giving minority-led organizations a fair shot at getting the money that we're giving out? Because even though there's a question that we ask the applicants when they apply for housing and community development, we actually ask them a question, but we don't actually ask them a question. We say, you know, do you have minority representation? But we don't actually ask them how to describe how they are personally diverse, their organization that would implement. So is there a piece of this, I didn't see a question there, where you're scoring or asking them to explain, are they a minority-led organization? Are they, how many minority members are on their board? Because what we've learned over time, what I've learned over time, is that white-led organizations have a particular portfolio in the community, but we're missing a whole bunch of people. And one of the links to getting to those folks that need our help is to have organizations that are led by people who look like them. So where are we with that?
So Resource X would be used for the first initial application, like the letter of intent. And then it would go to Apricot, which a lot of our funders currently use, the city uses it, United Way uses it. And in that system, it does ask for the race and ethnicity of all the board members and things like that.
How about their managers and the people who actually implement their program?
We can customize it.
We can customize it. I can't
remember. We're not going to use exactly what you use now. We want to customize it to our
So I'm not going to go into great detail about it, but today we had a meeting for an hour about how a black-led organization in our community had applied for community development block grant money, but was shut out of the process through a series of steps and missteps. And that's real. And so I hope that we can encourage, rather than saying, oh, yeah, we got that covered, that we do a couple of laps around that to make sure that we are truly, genuinely engaging black-led organizations and giving them an opportunity for funding.
Thank you. Yeah. And I think there's also part of also your capacity check where you will then partner with organizations to help if they don't have enough staff or they haven't gone through the process before on doing the applications.
We want to say, we're about to talk about the RFP. Carlin, I don't know if you want to mention that, the RFP that's out there now.
Yeah, so currently we have an RFP out right now that we're looking for a provider to actually help just with that, would help with building capacity for these small not-for-profit organizations that are getting started, but really need that help in order to move to that next level so they can actually be able to get funding from the city.
I think our intentions with that are that maybe we can keep this going. And then they could start reaching out for grants from maybe the state or higher governmental grants as well. So it wouldn't only be the city funding these types of programs.
But just to answer your question, we have seen that where there's a lot of organizations that want to do good and they want to help out, but they need that support in order for them to build up their capacity, in order for them to go out and actually receive CDBG funding or federal funding or state funding. And so hopefully this process will do just that.
All right, last minute, Matt.
Did you say if you're grading or scoring the applications as they come in, or are you waiting till a deadline and then doing everything at once?
Not sure on that piece. I think it could work either way.
How long will this be open?
Initially, we thought we would open it until we have the next conversation about the second tranche and then sort of close it down so it can be retooled for the second tranche of money, take whatever we've received, score them, and send them through the next RFP process or the Apricot process.
We're not bound by any scores, right?
Correct.
No.
All up to our decisions.
Yeah.
Okay. Thanks. Well, thank you so much. And Eric, thank you for your hearing test. And your participation and presentation.
Thank you.
Yes, thank you.
Thank you very much. Best wishes to you. Look forward to working with you.
Thank you. Okay, next on our agenda, we have FUSIS Real-Time Crime Center presentations.
Yes, and so I will let Chief Jones.
Okay, I'm going to make a couple quick introductions.
Please do.
They can get started. I'm sure there's going to be a lot of questions. This is Jack Howard, Carlo Capano. Both are with FUSIS. Just a little bit about FUSIS, and then they'll get into the presentation, answer a lot of questions. I emailed the city manager the answers to some questions. I hope that got sent out. or forward it?
I may not have been able to send it out.
Okay. If not, we'll forward those.
I haven't seen the email yet.
I think a lot of the questions will get answered by the presentation, but certainly I can answer those. So Fusus basically connects cameras on any platform so that those cameras can be shared. We're not asking to add cameras. We're not asking to add surveillance capability. What we're asking for is efficiency in getting access to video when crimes occur or even when we have events. A football game would be an example. The university handles that. But another example would be in schools. And I want to thank some people who are here real quick for coming and showing our support. We have Nikki from the district. We have Dr. Yearwood from CPS, Chief Weimer from MUPD. Who am I missing, Brian? Rusty's here from the Columbia Mall. One of the things that I'm excited about with this is a communications tool, and I will let them talk about that, but it does allow for us to send out communication during an event real time, instead of us going through a rave alert, which is a system that we currently use where we have to call the front desk, form a message, give it to someone else who then sends it out to everybody. We can actually send it to the people who enroll with us so that we can send messages while we're at the scene. We had an incident at Oak Towers early in the year, and some community members had some frustration. This is one communication tool that could address some of that. I really think that this gives us the ability through technology to connect with the community, give them and empower them to help solve crimes in their neighborhoods and act as a deterrent. So with that, I will let you guys get started and we'll answer any questions that you have. Okay.
So thank you for having us. My name is Kyle Capano with Fusus. We handle the Northeast territory of the country. And my co-worker, Jack Howard. So we're going to run you through a quick PowerPoint that Jack and I are going to piggyback on here for you folks. It's going to give you a really good overview on what Fusus does and what it has to offer and what it's going to bring to your community and make it safer overall. Our whole purpose here is to work with the community to build that bridge and the gap that is in between the community, police, and keeping everybody safe and working with one another. And that's what Fusus does. It's a software service that we have. And what it's going to do is it's going to allow the police department to overlay that on their existing technology, and that's what we're going to walk you through right now. So I'd like to start first with just letting you know. So Fusus, we are the most widely used real-time crime center in the country. We're in over 130 agencies, cities across the country right now, and we probably have around 25 to 30 more projects that are going on as we speak before they become on as partners with us now. And that's what we're here for today, is to build that partnership with the City of Columbia. So what can we do for the community? So this is going to walk you through a few minutes. I'm going to just talk to you about what it is that Fusus does and how we're able to do that. We can ingest any data source that you have that you want to give us access to. When I say us, I'm talking about the City of Columbia, the police department. So any of those data sources that are out there, if you would like to, it is all 100% permission-based, you can share that information with the police department. We can pull in any public or private video feed. So public being all the access that the police department and the city already has in place, you can pull that into this platform, and private video feed. So you can pull in businesses, the mall that we talked about, you can pull in a local convenience store, you can pull in a hardware store, anything that wants to come into the Fusus platform and they want to participate, they can do so. Again, please keep in mind, permission-based. So they have to opt in to allow this to happen, and that's what Fusus can do. And we pull all of that into a single platform. What we mean by that is everything is on that one pane of glass, so that one screen in front of the officer that's at work in their patrol car, the one screen of the communication center, of the officer or the investigator in the building. They can log in once and have access to all this information right there in front of them. We're camera agnostic, meaning whatever system that you have out there, if it is an open loop system, we can have access to it if you provide that permission to do so. We can turn any camera that you have into an artificial intelligence enabled camera. So when I talk about artificial intelligence, please understand that is object-based. That is not facial recognition. This is searching for a red van, a person on a bicycle, a person that may have a backpack or be wearing a hat. So it is an object-based system that searches for colors and objects. We can ingest license plate readers. So you have multiple license plate readers out there. We can ingest that information onto that one screen. So if something did come in, an Amber Alert, and you're searching all these different systems to try to locate that vehicle on that Amber Alert, you can search that right through the Fusus platform all in one place. Our entire motto of our company is smashing silos, meaning that officer or that person that is working the Fusus platform does not have to log into multiple platforms to get to where they need to get to. They log in once with Fusus, and they have all this information right there at their fingertips to be able to do their job more effectively and more efficiently, keeping that community more safe than what it already is. Shot detection systems. If you don't have shot detection systems, if you get them down the road, we can ingest that information. What that does for you, if a gunshot is heard and goes off, the system detects that, and what that will do is then enable the five cameras closest to where that shot goes off will activate for the police department so they can see what is going on as they are responding to that particular incident if you have those shot detection systems. And we also bring in the CAD system for the police department. The CAD system is a computer-aided dispatch. That's how officers are sent to calls for service as calls come into that police department. This information pulls into the Fusus system, and then that officer that's going to that call for service can have cameras populated if they have the permission to do so to see what it is that that officer is walking into. For instance, God forbid there's something at the mall, at a school, at the university, we'd be able to have that situational awareness to be able to respond, allocate the proper resources for that particular incident. We have unlimited user and seat licenses, meaning that as you go on with Fusus, if you come on with Fusus, however many people are employed at the police department, everybody would have access. There's no individual charges for a seat license, so everybody in that agency would be able to have access to the Fusus system. And we utilize all your existing equipment. We do not do a rip and replace, meaning we're not removing your current equipment and putting in other equipment. We're not here to sell you any type of cameras, license plate readers, shot detection. We are just simply selling you a software that is going to pull all of this information into one place to make you more effective and more efficient. And what we mean by all that access and data stored in one place, that means it's all on that Fusus platform. Remember I talked about single sign-on. So you sign on once. You're not signing into, multiple systems to access those license plate readers, the shot detection. Everything is going to be in that one spot, that one pane of glass, the Fusus One platform. What does this mean for you as a city, as your community? Is we're building that community trust and relationship. What do I mean by that? If we are working with the public, from the police department's perspective, they require the public to help them solve crimes. And that's what we're doing. We're working with the public, bridging that gap, to make sure that we're working hand in hand to keep your community safer. We're going to provide a platform that's a force multiplier. We all know police officers can't be everywhere at once to keep your community safe. If you're utilizing your existing technology that is out there, it becomes a multiplier because now you know what to do when a call for service comes in and you can properly allocate your resources. Maybe there is that call for service that comes in and it sounds like it's really bad. If you can access the existing technology, you might see that it does not require five or six police cruisers to go handle that incident. Maybe that is just one officer that needs to handle that incident. Does not create that scare to the community that six cruisers are in one spot, what is going on. So that's what we can do with allocating those resources by looking at that technology. Then we can increase your ability to solve crime. How is that? Because we're able to access that technology. We're able to bring that information to Fusus platform. That Amber Alert that goes out, you can start searching for those license plates. That the shot detection system that goes off, you can actually access this information in real time, push that out to the officers on the street, and help solve those crimes that are out there. And it's a platform that's built. It's a software as a service, a platform built to make you more effective and more efficient by bringing in all these resources to that one place. Connected communities are safe communities. Now, what does that mean? The first bullet, the Columbia Connect program, because that's what we would build for you, and I will get into that in a little bit. That's for the residents' building businesses and the local public safety agencies to work together, create a safer community by working together with the residents of Columbia, making it a safer place, right? That's the whole idea. The program is going to introduce the latest community-oriented tools, and it's going to build that partnership with the police department and the community itself, bridging that gap, working together hand in hand to reduce crime, prevent crime, and make it a safer community for everybody. And the tools include security camera registry. Now, what is a registry? Jack is going to go into this in a moment, but a registry is you're just going to say, I have cameras. I'm not going to give you access to them, but if you need something, let me know. We have them at our business. We create a registry for you. The ability to share footage, if you choose, 100% permission-based. You can choose to share cameras with the police department or not. Or you can get as granular as picking exactly which cameras you want to share. For instance, if this building wanted to share the front lobby and the exterior cameras and the parking decks, you can just share those. But maybe you don't want to share this room here. You have complete control on what is shared with the police department. We also have an incident tips line that allows you to send tips into the police department, working with that community. And we also have a notification program that Jack's going to get into in a few minutes as well. How this all works, we're streamlining emergencies by creating better situational awareness, getting the information to the officers in the field so they can do their job more effectively, more efficiently. We create incident management, putting it on a different level by having that situational awareness, allowing you to do your job more effectively, more efficiently. We enable the real-time crime centers to efficiently gather intelligence. The intelligence that we're gathering is already out there. You already have all this intelligence. The difference is it's not in one place. It's siloed in different areas. You have a shot detection system here. You have license plate reader A here, license plate reader B here, your CAD system. We're allowing you to gather all this information and bring it together in one place and provide first responders with the tools to make them more effective. Allow them to monitor and rapidly respond to everything that is going on in the community to create a safer community. This slide here is Effusus enhancing public safety in other communities. As I stated earlier, we're in 130 agencies across the country. These are some just sample clips of how successful Effusus has been. If you notice up here in the top left here, you're looking at Atlanta PD, tracking down gunshots that were in Atlanta and arresting the people that are responsible for those. Right here, Atlanta PD calling Effusus a game changer because we're able to pull all this information in and access it immediately to provide information to the officers to do their job quicker, more efficiently. Right up here in North Carolina, solving shooting incidents. Then we have right here, Jackson, Mississippi. Same thing, deterring crime. We're not just out there solving crime. FUSA is going to help deter crime. Why is that? Because we're able to create a message to the community that you, the community, are working with that police department and you're harnessing the technology that's already out there and you're creating a better environment for the citizens of Columbia. Shreveport. Shreveport had a serious gun crime problem. They've been reducing their crimes. Their violent crime is down, gun crimes is down, and they credit that to FUSIS. The Shreveport mayor has come out and said that. The Atlanta mayor has come out and said that. So this is just a snippet of some of the things that we're doing. More importantly, this talks about all the violent crime and all the bad things that happen in these communities. We're also helping on more levels than that. And we're going to show you a little two-minute video when we're done with our presentation that talks about a missing elderly person and how the Atlanta Police Department utilized FUSIS and they're able to locate that person. It's a really powerful video that we want to share with you today. And after this slide, I'm going to turn it over to my colleague, Jack, and he's going to jump in from here.
All right, great. Thank you again for everyone having us here. We're really glad to be back here. So picking up where Carla left off, we're talking about keeping Columbia safe and the communities that you serve. Deploying FUSIS is truly going to enable the Columbia Police Department to effectively and efficiently respond to the crimes in progress. And this is what we're talking about. We want to enable the patrol officers, give them the tools that are already out there. We know the benefits that FUSIS can bring to your detectives to investigate crimes. Now we're talking about pushing that out to the patrol officers, the first responders, that are on the scene, the first of scenes for everything, a fire incident, a police incident. We want to put those tools in there. We want to equip the officers with the best knowledge that they have, give them advanced knowledge of the situation, and then easily gather evidence in that incident. One of the first times we met with Chief Jones, one of his first priorities he said back when we first met in February is, hey, listen, how can we reduce the amount of burden we're putting on members of the community to come in and testify of crimes of violence in their neighborhoods? How can we reduce that? Here's how we can reduce this. If we can enable the officers on the front end to effectively and efficiently respond to crimes and get the right bad actors off the street immediately, then it's going to relieve the burden of the detectives on the back end and possibly civilian witnesses for having to come to court and have to go through that burden of going to court hearing after court hearing after court hearing. Get the bad guys on the front end, problem is solved. Carlo talked about our tips and notify function. This is very important to us. This is an essential portion of our Community Connect program. We have what's called FUSIS Notify and FUSIS Tip. FUSIS Notify is exactly what it means. It's the ability for the chief and his command staff to send out a quick message to the residents of Columbia in an opt-in program, completely voluntary, via an SMS text, just a regular old-fashioned text message. And push out a quick message. This is capturing those residents in the community of Columbia that aren't active on social media, that don't have a Facebook message profile, that don't have a Twitter, don't Snapchat, all these things out there. Quick and down and dirty way to get a quick message out to the citizens of Columbia in an emergency situation. On the flip side, we have what's called FUSIS Tips. This is the ability for the citizens of Columbia to help the police on the front end. Again, enable and help the patrol officers on the front end. Hey, listen, I was walking my daughter to school today. This red car keeps circling the block. It's the third time it circled the block. I took this picture. I took down the license plate. Maybe something and maybe nothing, but here's my name. Here's my phone number. Text that tip in. Columbia Police Department can effectively, efficiently respond to that crime in progress or possible crime in progress. Or, on the flip side, they could rule it out. It could be some innocent whatever circling the block. But either way, it's enabling the members of the community to keep engaged and help out the police department. The Community Camera Registry. This is our function that allows members of the public, and it doesn't have to be residential. It can be business owners. Business owners might be like, you know what? I support the police. I want to help police reduce crime in my area. Police detectives are always coming to my business asking for cameras after a crime occurs. This is a function for before a crime occurs. We want the community, and again, completely voluntary, completely opt-in, but this is for those business owners, residential owners that aren't comfortable sharing video in real time. That's fine. You share at your comfort level. So the way this becomes truly a force multiplier for the Columbia Police Department is that before patrol officers, before detectives have to do the traditional canvas, what do I mean by canvas? Getting out of their squad car, knocking on the door, looking up, trying to find a camera, seeing who the shop owner is, see who the resident is, and seeing if they even know their login and password. This is a way to say, hey, listen, here's my name. My name's Jack Howard. I have two cameras. Here's my name. Here's my number. If you need anything, send me an email. Give me a call. And then, even then, as the homeowner or business owner, I could still choose, you know what, I'm still not comfortable sharing the footage. Fine, no harm, no foul. That's what our camera registry does. It really enables the community, especially the business owners, especially in the district as we stand here today, to keep connected, to get on board, and it's extremely fast and easy. We'll demonstrate what our successful initiatives are going on in Atlanta with our Connect Atlanta and a Connect Orlando initiatives. Community camera sharing. So these are these business owners and entities such as the schools, the malls, the universities that are saying, hey, listen, I do want to take that next step. I do want to help the police respond effectively and efficiently to crimes in progress. Here's how we can do it. It is a 100% permission-based camera sharing system that takes it that step further and enables the first responders to access your cameras as they're responding to the crimes in real time. Again, I'm pushing back to the patrol officers. Those first officers, when they arrive on the scene, he or she can get out of their squad cars and have some type of situational awareness of what they're walking into. What were the events that led up to that call for service? Because when a community member or citizen makes that 911 call, that crime's over. Whatever happened, it's over. So the police are already behind the game. So this is enabling those business owners to help the police with situational awareness. And more importantly, it's helping the police get the right bad actor, right? If the police department is responding to a 911 call for service and they have the ability, with permission of that business, to pull up that camera, they can correctly identify who the bad actor is. Hey, I just pulled up the camera. The bad guy has got a red shirt. The bad girl is carrying a black purse. Whatever the situation is, it's giving those officers situational awareness to get the right people and not grab the wrong people. We truly want to make your officers more an effective and efficient fighting force, and this is the way it's going to do it. Security cameras can always be on or can always be an alert. Carlo alluded to this, the example here in today. Hey, listen, we're in the Columbia City Hall. We want to share only the exterior cameras all the time. Interiors, we're only going to set that based on incident-based only. A panic alert is tripped. We're doing that in, all across the country with the schools. Schools are responding to a number of threats. We all know what's going on right now, and that's the trade-off we're seeing in the school communities where, you know what, listen, we're not ready to give you 100% access, but those exterior, outward-facing public cameras, 100%. We would love you to keep an eye on our parking lot. We do have hit and runs. We do have catalytic converter thefts. We do have fights that occur in the parking lot. And generally, we want you keeping an eye on our public-facing areas. The interiors, you know what? Let's slow it down. Maybe just incident-based only. Fair trade-off. But again, it's all at your fingertips. It's all at the donor site control. And depending on whatever their preference is. If you do choose to share your cameras, we're going to talk about how we do that. It's just one piece of appliance that it's a plug-and-play core appliance. We've had a number of meetings with many members of the IT community here in Columbia and discussed our security architecture and how robust it is. But that's it. That's how it gets here. And that's a quick illustration of what a core looks like. That little piece up there under line two, that pulls in up to four cameras. That's a one-piece equipment that allows the ability, again, with permission, for the police to access the cameras in real time. I won't go through all the steps here, but it's a very seamless transition where members, and again, we're going to talk about Connect Atlanta, Connect Orlando, where members of the community can go right to this website and say I'm a corner of a grocery store that has four cameras. With the click of a button, company owner could register their cameras, have that core device shipped right to them, and then they're up and running. And again, they could set the level-based permissions. Two exterior cameras all the time, two interior cameras, incident-based only. This is just a quick example. Lake County Schools, this is just outside Orlando, in the St. Cloud area, just a little bit to the north. And this is one county. Up to 2,300 teachers are using the First Alert for the FUSIS platform. Back in 2018-2019, Florida passed the Marjorie Stoneman Douglas law. They called it Alyssa's Law. It's the law of the land. Every single teacher in the state of Florida has to have some type of panic alert device. We include that as part of our package. And again, customizable, permission-based. It's up to the police department and the schools how to deploy it. If they choose, they might have a different solution, but we are offering a solution, and our solution in one county is allowing 2,300 teachers to have access to a panic alert device that will spin up the cameras in real time and provide that information to the police officers responding to that school in Lake County, so they, again, have situational awareness of what they're walking into. The chief, the incident commander, can now deploy additional resources based on how serious the situation is. Again, what we're talking about is a proportional response. And if it's a false alert, we do it the other way. Slow it down. Take it easy. Don't kill yourselves getting there. It looks like to be a false alarm. I'm going to show you a quick video for Lake County. I think this only runs about 2 minutes. Oh, go back.
You might have to go right here.
Yeah, and Jack, I'm mindful that we probably have a lot of questions for you.
Sure.
So
yep.
I definitely want to see the
I'm
video.
Look at the clock, 6:25. Are we still good?
Yeah.
Okay.
Just know that we'll have a question.
Play media. All right, we're going to skip that one. It looks like it's not pulling up the media. Okay. So this is what the emergency alert system looks like. It's an app-based. There's no additional hardware. It's a Android and iOS compatible. Again, it sends an immediate notification alert to alert the PD and officers in the field. And again, what we're talking about is those multi-jurisdictional responses that you're going to get in a type of call like this. So just imagine here in Columbia, it's going to be the Boone County Sheriff. It's going to be MUPD. It's going to be Columbia, all converging into one location. We're trying to break down those silos and give the officers the tools they need when they respond to that. Again, we are very cognizant, and our whole platform is built around respecting privacy, but more importantly, increasing safety. This program ensures that the camera owners retain 100% complete control over who accesses their cameras and when they access. We're truly trying to build a collaborative network and increase the safety and security for the residents here in Columbia. And again, I won't write, we've kind of gone over the benefits of this, but what I really want to jump into, and again, I want to keep an eye on time, Carl's going to spin up. We talked about two things. First, you want to go to Connect Atlanta, and we'll show them really quick.
Sure.
So this is, we're going to show you, this will take 1 minute. This is our Connect Atlanta website. Anyone can go to the website. It's called connectatlanta.org. This is a website and partnership that we partnered with the City of Atlanta, the Atlanta Police, and the Atlanta Police Foundation. The Atlanta Police Foundation has a very robust public-private partnership that they did a lot of community outreach. And up to today, we have registered and partnered with the community over 5,000 cameras, and those are the people that are saying, hey, listen, I have a camera, I'm just not comfortable sharing, but here's my name, here's my number, and over 10,000 integrated cameras where those officers have access. If you scroll down just a little, members of the community can go on that website and learn what's the program about, how long it's been going on. Project Shield's been up and running in Atlanta for years, and we've simplified it where it's a one-stop shop. That level one takes 60 seconds to register a camera. Level two, we won't get into it, is about going, having those business owners go directly to that website and interact with them.
If I could just add, so
sure.
This website here, this is what we created for Atlanta. And the whole idea of this is help us help you, meaning help the community, help the Atlanta Police Department, keep Atlanta safe. We build this website for you, however you would like to name it and what you would like it to look like. And then we'll present this to you upon your approval. You then provide that to the community, and then you'll now have this website to be able to either register that camera with the click and or access the camera to the police department. It's entirely up to them. So this is something that we would build for you as a part of our Community Connect team that we have out there. Last thing we're going to show you, and then we're going to answer all the questions, is a quick two-minute video. If the video will play, I'm not sure why the other one didn't, so I'm going to try to jump into this one here.
Yeah, I'll go look up and I'll go down all those stairs and everything and see if I can find anything.
When she walked out, did they have any video footage? Do you have any video cameras?
I'm checking the cameras. The he said she left at, or last saw her at 12:12. That's when she left the building.
Yes.
So I've been trying to run the cameras. Hey, I'm gonna give you this picture. Yeah. Yeah.
She's in the Fusus platform right from her cruiser doing the search.
So that's just a snip of literally what happened at 2, 3, 4 in the morning in downtown Atlanta, led to the exterior areas. The old way of doing police work would have had officers knocking on doors, trying to retrieve video in the middle of the night. This way, again, we've talked about enabling our patrol officers who are working overnight to do the job that they're paid to do, and utilize the existing technology that's already there without having to knock on doors, without having a canvas to do it the old-fashioned way. And this speaks volumes of what we're looking to bring here to the city of Columbia. Great.
Mayor, with that, care for any questions you may have?
Yeah. So we received a few email questions, I know, coming through. And we have, obviously, the letters of support that were included on this. So I know one of the ones in our letters of support was asking about, I know in Atlanta you do a public education campaign, and just wondering what we were planning for Columbia to really inform the public on what we're doing, what we're using that data for.
So we would work, so we have our, sorry, stand up so everybody can hear me a little bit. So we have what we call a Fusus Connect team. So that community connecting that we have, we'll work with the police department, work with your PIOs, we'll supply you with business cards, we'll supply you with flyers, we'll supply you with that web page, we'll supply you with any type of educational value that you would then turn around and push out to the community. Our team would then also work with the police department in the community to educate them on what Fusus is about, what the registry is compared to sharing camera streams, and then we also have a call-out center that would also help working with the police department to reach out to certain private companies to see if they're interested and educate them on what is Fusus, how it works, how you can get involved, how you can help keep Columbia safe. So we would work with you on that Fusus Connect team.
Yeah. And then one of the other ones I got was, you had those websites up from crime reduction. So just wondering, like, how you evaluate the effectiveness of it and show the difference in numbers from before and after for crime reduction.
Yeah, so Fusus doesn't have the data. So we're supplying you with the software that is going to be provided to each individual agency. Each individual agency will collect and relay that data how they choose to. So what we get is a lot of the success stories on, again, Shreveport saying that their crime is down 7%. Their gun violence is down. I was talking to the mayor in Richmond, Virginia, who just met with Shreveport and said it's down 45%. So each individual agency will actually be able to handle and manage that, because at Fusus, we're supplying the software, but we're not managing and collecting the data on everything that they do.
Other questions? Yeah, Nick.
Just wondering about access to the video at any given time. And so I'm a little confused still about always on and so forth. So if a camera is always on, I assume that means that the police can access it at any time. Is that right?
So two parts there. Yes and no. So if a camera is always on, clearly it's always on, that individual private company can choose what they are going to allow the police department to have access to. So if they give access to that camera and it's always on, the police department would have access to the camera. Then it becomes a policy base from the police department when they're going to look into those cameras. Second part of that is we have with the Fusus alert, the alert system, is you can provide no access to your cameras unless that alert button is hit, and then it can turn those cameras on for the police department through policy based. And then again, that becomes policy of the police department, how they choose to manage that.
So the police would also have access to recordings from all of these cameras that are always on as well, is that right?
Depends if they want to provide live stream only, or they can supply a very short amount of time for operational use of recordings. So it could be 2 days up to 4 days of operational use, and then after that, they no longer have access to what was recorded. They would then have to go back to that particular business and look at their video management system to go further back in time. And that can all be set up through that permission base. You can provide them with how many, however you want, 1 day, 2 days, up to 4 days of that operational use of that video. So it can be configured however the business owner would like it configured.
If I could add, it literally is not, it is in the hands of the business owner. So if the business owner has a camera system that records up to 30 days and the business owner wants to share 30 days of footage, that's up to them. We make things. Typically, though, this is a tool for police officers responding to crimes in progress. We don't need 30 days.
So I guess that helps. So if the camera's always on, would the police be able to just take a look at that camera under any circumstance?
That would be a policy for the police department. They would manage that policy as far as when and who would even have access to that camera.
Another part to this is there's an audit function, which I'm very impressed with. So anyone who logs into a camera, for any reason, it will log date, time, what they accessed, so that we have a log of what is accessed. In reality, we don't have time to go in and just look through cameras, but if that were to occur for some reason, that's something that we could look at an audit. We could look at an individual officer and see what they're looking at. So there's some audit function in that that is pretty impressive.
You literally cannot do anything in the system without it being cataloged and logged.
And if I could just one more add, this is a CJIS compliant system with that audit trail, meaning the police department, under their policies and procedures, we treat this as any other law enforcement database, and that the standards that are followed with all the other databases would be followed in this case and would be complied with in the audit function.
Okay.
Matt, you had a question?
Maybe this is for Chief Jones, but could you maybe walk us through the process? So if there's, something happens, on a weekend evening, late at night, what's the process now? Your officers get there and say, oh, there's a camera right there that would, potentially have recorded that. What does that look like?
So depending on the business, whether it's open or closed, we'll either have the obstacle of getting someone to come in if it's a closed business, or going into a business where they don't know the password, they don't have access to the system, they don't know how to work the system, or they don't know how to download the video. Those are common, I'd say, and Richard Murder's here, probably 50-75% of all of those, that we run into those obstacles. So we had the shooting in the central part of the city, and that was solved with cameras. We did a camera canvas, I think, for 8 or 10 days, was it, Matt? But it took us days and days and days, hours, hundreds of hours, detectives all over the city trying to track this car through the city. This is something that eliminates all of that. So it is really frustrating for detectives and officers when we try to get the video. It's closed. They don't know how to work it. They don't know how to download it. They have no flash drive to give us if evidence is closed. Hopefully the officer has their own flash drive to get it into evidence. This can actually be shared directly with us and put into the same evidence vault that we use for our body-worn camera system. So they partnered with Axon for that purpose. So it's compliant with CJIS in that way too.
And we saw in that video, there were some video from the body cameras and a few other video. Is it common for them to prioritize figuring out if there is video when they're investigating an incident? And then, is it again, is it almost always the case, sometimes the case, where there is a video component to whatever investigation is occurring anyhow?
It is much more frequent than it used to be. I would say we almost always try to get video where we can. It is almost always difficult. The other thing I want to point out, and your question reminds me of this, we're not asking anybody to add anything or add any capability to their own system. These videos are being recorded anyway. So when we see the camera, we're requesting that video, but what would have taken us 4 days or a week is now taking us minutes or hours if we're calling somebody at home and saying, hey, you're on the registry, we could really use that video. Or can you check your video to see if you have something? So it's, you know, sending out a mass email as opposed to knocking on each individual door. But I don't want anybody to be confused that we're adding cameras or that we're adding a recording capability. That information is still with what they call the donor or the business owner. It's still their video. We still have parameters to request that based on their comfort level in the beginning or if they don't give access right out. Based on the circumstances. So we're not adding recordings by doing this.
Right. And the other area that I wanted to ask you about was, Dr. Yearwood, thank you for being here this evening, but where are those conversations with CPS in terms of, you know, how you would use this in response to, you know, some sort of violent incident in the school?
So and I'll let others talk too, but the benefit for us is that we can work with CPS incident-based and SOS-based. So, correct me if I'm wrong, it'll tell us generally where they're at in the building based on the GPS on their phone. So if they send out an alert and they need us there and we pull up cameras, it sends officers to the place, let's say it's an active shooter. It sends us to the place where the shooter is. We're not trying to listen for gunfire because every time a round goes off, someone's potentially getting hurt or killed. So it's sending us to the point that we need to be and looking at those cameras real time. So we're not depending on witnesses who are scared and barricaded and running. We're looking at cameras to identify where that's at. And the school has, and I'll let Dr. Yearwood talk, we've been in those conversations and everybody's interested in keeping people safe.
And it's a timeliness of response and being able to get someone in as fast as possible because, you know, the longer you wait, loss of life, you know, the dangers increase. So, again, being able to be very accurate with location, be more accurate with who the perpetrator is at that point in time, and be able to mitigate that much faster time. Those are important aspects of soreness.
I want to give one other example. It's not local. The Arvada, Colorado Police Department, if you remember, probably don't pay attention to it, but a couple of years ago, a police officer was ambushed and killed. The person who shot the police officer was killed or shot by a Good Samaritan, and the Good Samaritan was then killed by the police because they thought that he was the active shooter. With a system like this, it gives us real-time information so that we're identifying the people that we need to identify. We're not relying on witness statements. We're not relying on people to recount things under stress. We are responding real-time. And I think that had that technology been available there, there's a real possibility that someone who was trying to preserve other people's lives may not be dead at the hands of the police. It's tragic, but I think that technologies like this, and evolving the way that they are, when used responsibly, can really have an impact on public safety in a positive way.
Other questions?
I have several things I'd like to say. Chief Jones, I looked at the letters that came in, and I read the report or the submission, the number of groups that you've talked to about this system. I wondered if you have already pulled together, and I was trying to make a list of stakeholders, of folks that I would call who would be cautious about the use of this technology that could help guide us in making decisions about the practices and the policies that would go along with the implementation of this system. So where are we in putting those folks together?
So all of our policies, we don't have a policy on this yet. We would have a policy before implementation. All of our policies go through the public process. As you may recall, prior to COVID, we had our person who's working on our CALEA accreditation come through and would sit down and pull up draft policies on a screen before they ever got looked at by me or the city manager. And we would have public input as to what those policies were and how they would interact with people. There's a training component to this. People need to be educated to what it is before we can have that conversation. Obviously, I can't start educating people on something until the council has decided whether or not we're going to go forward with it.
Well, I think you can, because you've encountered and you've convened these other groups. And this is going to sound more critical than I intended to, but I have attended the meetings where your officer was showing us the new policies so that for public input. And I brought several concerns to the city manager immediately after that, because it didn't feel like a public input process. It didn't feel like a discussion. And I was like one of three people in the room. So when I start thinking about the folks that would have a strong opinion, and I'll start with the bail fund, our folks that volunteer their time and help get folks who are nonviolent offenders out of jail, they have some pretty strong opinions about the implementation of this system before we have a policy that helps and reassures our community. There are other groups, I think, that would also, I know that there are more than one group of families of victims of violent crime. There's the ACLU who wrote us a letter today. I got a copy of that. There are public defenders and juvenile public defenders who will have opinions about whether or not our policies are fair to their clients or to folks of a certain demographic. And so I really would like to see us convene that group for a discussion with the same amount of enthusiasm that we've already convened the stakeholders that have already come forward. And I want us to have a safe community too. But I also represent the First Ward, and when we had an election in 2010 about whether or not we should have more cameras in the city, while the city as a whole voted 59% for that, the First Ward said no. And I am hearing from people in the First Ward who remind me every day that different people are treated differently in our city. So to make sure that we implement something like this on this scale fairly, I'm going to encourage us to have that that convening of folks who can help us focus exactly the kinds of policies and protections we need before we move forward with this.
Thank you, Pat. Any questions, Ross?
No.
You're in good piece, Betsy. Any questions? I have one just follow-up, too. A few years ago, we partnered with Ring or one of the doorbell companies, and I noticed you had an example of the doorbell on. Is that one of the ones, too, so we talk a lot about businesses, and all our letters are from businesses, but is that also one of the partners?
So we can go into an open-loop system. Ring is a closed-loop system,
okay.
But they can register those cameras. So if I'm a homeowner and I have a Ring camera system, I can still register that to say, hey, I have X amount of cameras at my house or my business.
Mm-hmm.
It is a Ring name manufacturer. Mm-hmm. If you need that, just let me know, and I'll supply that to you. Email goes out to that that resident or business owner saying, we're looking for video clips from this date, this particular time, for this particular incident, with a hyperlink. They can then go into their system, drop that information there, and it gets sent right back to the police department and gets logged in that system that you can go in and look for that.
And I guess because it was related to this is, do we have a policy on that? Like on, you know what I mean? Is that one of the policies we have for accessing that camera information?
So we have an MOU with them.
Okay.
Really, at a basic level, people either share that video with us or they don't.
Right, you're not looking
at it. Honestly, a lot of what we see is posted to social media, and the officer will follow up. I mean, I'm on Nextdoor, people know that, but someone will put something out and put out a picture, a snapshot, or a video, and then I'll contact them and say, hey, have you contacted the police department? That would be helpful to us. And then they'll make a report and follow up, or they won't. Usually they do, and we move forward with that.
has to be an outreach education component and there has to be a policy component. I don't think that this presentation, without discussion broader than that, is good enough for the policy implementation part. We're not here to spy on people. We're not here to add additional cameras. And the video is already being recorded. We're looking for a system that objectively reports to us through video what activity is occurring and what the suspects are driving, what they look like, so that we're focusing on the people committing the crimes and not people outside of that. As I've said before, it's fishing with a spear instead of a net.
I know we're coming to the end of the time, so I imagine that a lot of the conversation and the questions that have will help us lead our next steps with this, and obviously the start of the policy and who's involved in the review of the policy. So any last minute questions before I adjourn us to go into our next meeting?
What is next?
The council meeting.
No,
DeCarlin, what is next with this?
The next step is if the council is comfortable with us moving forward, it's just that moving forward. I mean, we have to.
So it starts first with the contract with FISA, and then, but we don't actually start utilizing it until you have a policy for which, and then your policy obviously takes time to develop because it needs stakeholder input,
correct,
as well as you reviewing it as far as accreditation pieces.
That is correct.
So the time frame for that is out.
Oh, so we'll have to bring it forward. We have to talk about the funding process or how we're going to fund it. Then we'd have to start developing the policy.
We're already looking at sample policies and through discussions that we're having with individuals and other groups, we will be able to have hopefully a draft that we can refine and have something that's suitable.
How many months do you think, Chief?
I think within 60 days we can have a policy that's anticipated.
And it comes back to council, is that, or no, goes to your president?
Yeah, goes to Carl.
That's pretty fast, 60 days.
Luckily, there's sample policies out there.
Yeah, but they're not going to get enough stakeholder input, though.
Yeah, 1 minute, yeah.
So with 130 communities that have the software in place, there would also be an opportunity to inquire of them what data they've collected and where they have, how they have navigated this path of building trust in the community by looking at the best possible policy for how the video will be used. So I'm not okay with us moving forward until we've made substantial progress on that, and I'm happy to send to the city manager the list of stakeholders that occurred to me since I started thinking about this. I do want to make one more comment because I'm making a lot of folks in the downtown area unhappy by asking these thoughtful questions. I am the victim of a violent crime in Columbia, as well as the recent victim of a property crime. And I not only have thought about this as the first ward representative and what I've heard from people in our ward, but also would I feel differently if I just thought about it as the victim of a violent crime. And it happened in 2006, and I put my life back together, and I'm okay. But when I think about that, I still have these questions, and I still think the right thing for us to do is to engage a broader group of stakeholders and make sure that we take those steps so we don't undermine the trust that the community needs to have when we ultimately implement something like this. So I'm a hold until we have engaged these stakeholders, and I'm happy to send you that list, Mr. Seawood.
And I would say I heard that he was going to be engaging stakeholders and I think taking additional ideas on. And as the daughter of a person who went missing for 9 hours, I think how happy I would have been if she had come home 4 hours earlier. So
mm-hmm.
I'm not a hold because it sounds like we're thoughtfully moving forward on this. And I imagine you're going to keep engaging with City Council on it. Let's go ahead and adjourn this meeting so we can get into our 7 o'clock meeting in 4 minutes.